Welcome back to the Warren County Radio Bible School, and today we're going to continue a Sunday school lesson on Peter at the Transfiguration. Our text is Mark chapter 9, verses 2 through 10, where it says, "After 6 days Jesus taketh with him Peter and James and John, and bringeth them up into a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them." And then it says this, "His garments became glistering, exceeding white, as no fuller on earth can whiten them." Let's discuss the significance of that in just a moment. The Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. Christ became shining as a light on the Mount of Transfiguration. It gives us some indication of His glory, of His deity. You see, in the beginning, Jesus shared this light with God. The Word was God. He was with God, and the Word was God, John 1:1. Jesus was the effulgence of His glory and the very image of His substance, Hebrews 1 and verse 3. This same presence and glory light up the great city of God on high. It says in Revelation 21 and verse 23, "The city hath no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine upon it. But the glory of God did lighten it, and the lamp thereof is the Lamb." Humanity cannot look upon this light without physical pain, blindness, and death. So Jesus veiled this glory in the flesh when He came to earth, that He might sympathize with man and that they might be able to approach Him. He was changed, transfigured then, when He came to this earth. Now on this mountain He appears as He was in His glory with God before He came. The brightness not only shone round about Him, but it shone from within Him and through His flesh and garments, transforming them into exceeding whiteness and brightness. This is a glimpse and foretaste of what Christians will be in heaven. Who shall fashion anew the body of our humiliation, then it may conform to the body of His glory. Philippians 3:21. "And we know that if He shall be manifested, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him even as He is." 1 John 3:2. From these and other circumstances, it seems plain that in heaven, in glorified bodies, Christians will preserve their identity. Now Moses and Elijah were with Jesus on that mountain. We read in Mark chapter 9 and verse 4, "And there appeared unto them Elijah with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus." From the beginning, God, through angels or messengers, talked to men on earth. Angel means messenger. Men, as we have seen, could not look upon God's face directly and live. Moses saw His glory, but not His face. So God sent messengers to talk with him, and sometimes said that they had seen God because they saw the messengers He sent. But no mortal eye could stand the brightness of God's face. On this occasion, Moses and Elijah returned from the spirit land and talked with Jesus. Moses was a prophet and the lawgiver to the children of Israel. He was the highest type in the Old Testament of Jesus. When he was grown up, he gave Egypt its rich treasures, throne, and honors, and suffered affliction with the people of God as a slave in order to save them from Egyptian bondage. Jesus gave up the riches and glories of heaven for the poverty of earth and the form of God. and took the form of a servant, and died on the cross to save the race from sin and the grave. He too was a prophet and a lawgiver. He was that prophet of all the prophets of whom Moses was a fit type. The pupil should read to understand those references to Christ, like the ones in Deuteronomy 18, 15 through 22, where God told Moses, "I'll raise up a prophet like unto thee, and to him shall ye hearken." The law of Moses went from Sinai, the law of Jesus from Mount Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. The passage, "And Elijah the Tishbite was one of the sojourners of Gilead," 1 Kings 17:1, gives us all we know about Elijah's early life. He had been called the grandest and most romantic character that Israel ever produced. It was Elijah who prayed, and it did not rain for 3 years and 6 months. And then he prayed for rain, and it came. He lived in round numbers 900 years before Christ. He lived when the kingdom of Israel, under the very wicked King Ahab and his still more wicked wife Jezebel, was most corrupt. He was the law restorer and preserver. He reproved the king, the queen, and the false prophets alike. He was a fit type of John the Baptist, in whom spirit and power John came. Elijah never died. He went up by a whirlwind into heaven in a chariot of fire, drawn by horses of fire. Moses died in the land of Moab and was buried there in a valley, and no man knew of his grave. But it seems, since Michael the archangel and the devil contended about his body, that it was withdrawn from the grave by him who had the power of death. Moses was the head of the law, and Elijah was the head and representative of the prophets. The New Testament speaks of the law and the prophets. It seems fitting that the great lawgiver and the greatest of the old prophets should return from the state of the dead to confirm the truth that Jesus indeed is the fulfillment of the law and the prophets, in whom all center. How the apostles knew Moses and Elijah is not stated, but most likely Jesus told them. Moses and Elijah were in spirit bodies, but these bodies bore a striking resemblance to their earthly bodies. They, with Jesus in this glorified state, are examples of the complete redemption of the race. Moses and Elijah appeared in glory with Jesus. They were in glorified bodies, and the halo of light which animated from Jesus surrounded them. They spoke to Jesus of his decease, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. Not only his death, but his ascension, his departure, as the word really means, which was soon to be accomplished at Jerusalem. They talked upon the most important matter of earth and heaven. As the angel of God strengthened Jesus in Gethsemane for his death in answer to his prayer, may we not conclude that Moses and Elijah also encouraged him on this occasion to endure the cross and despise the shame? Did they, and this glorification, come in answer to his prayers? The three apostles were heavy with sleep, Luke 9:32. This took place in the night. They climbed the mountain in the evening before, were up through the night engaged in prayer, and were overcome with sleep, as in the garden. Moses and Elijah came, and Jesus was transfigured while the disciples were heavy with sleep. And when they were fully awake, when they had succeeded in driving sleep back, they saw his glory and the two men that stood with him. It must have been just before daybreak. Well, Peter made a proposition. It says in Mark chapter 9, verses 5 and 6, "Peter answered and saith to Jesus, Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make 3 tabernacles, one for thee, one for Moses, one for Elijah, for he knew not what to answer, for they became sore afraid. And as they were parting from them, it says in Luke 9:33, leaving, Peter made this proposition. He would detain them. The visitation was too brief. It was good to be in such company. It increased their faith and enlarged their conception of Jesus and his work and the glorified state of the redeemed. It must have produced a reaction from the shock and gloom they experienced a few days previous when Jesus announced that he must suffer and die at Jerusalem. By tabernacles, he meant booths made of the boughs of trees, as in the Feast of Tabernacles. He would make one for each and have them remain. He did not know or realize what he said, for they became so afraid. They seemed confused and lost, and wonder and delight. Well, now we're going to talk about the chief significance of this transfiguration. It says in Mark 9 in verse 7, and there came a cloud overshadowing them, and there came a voice out of the cloud, this is my beloved Son, hear him. Jesus made no reply to this proposition. That which followed was the reply. The request was not granted, but God gave a better answer to Peter's prayer. So will he give to ours. A bright cloud overshadowed them, and they entered into it. This was representative of God's glory. He was in the cloud and veiled by it from their sight. They feared as they were enveloped in this cloud. It must have been like the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night which attended the Israelites. Out of this cloud came the voice of God saying, this is my beloved Son. This was a repetition of the testimony God had borne to Jesus on the banks of the Jordan, but God adds here, hear ye him. This is the chief significance of the whole affair. They had heard Moses, the law, and Elijah, the prophets. Now they must hear Jesus. If the world had truly heard Moses and the prophets, it would have been ready to receive Jesus. The Mosaic dispensation was ending, and Jesus must be heard. Jesus fulfilled the law in a double sense. He kept every precept of it in spotless perfection, and he was the end of that which the law led. He was added because of the transgressions until Christ should come. In his death on the cross at Jerusalem, he took it out of the way. Having arisen from the dead, he established his kingdom, which shall stand forever, Daniel 2:44. Jesus is the prophet and lawgiver now. He is the one who speaks from heaven and the mediator of the new covenant. To hear him is to hear God. Hear ye him. And then Jesus talks about when to tell this vision. We read in Mark 9:8-10, and suddenly looking around, they saw no one anymore save Jesus only with themselves. And as they were coming down from the mountain, he charged them that they should tell no man what things they had seen, save when the Son of Man should have arisen again from the dead. And they kept the saying, questioning among themselves what the rising of the dead should mean. Matthew 17:6 says, when they heard this voice, they fell on their face and were sore afraid. They were awestruck at the voice in the presence of God and hid their eyes from his sight. Jesus kindly went to them, touched them, and lovingly bade them arise. And suddenly, looking round about, they saw no one anymore save Jesus only with themselves. All had gone. Jesus had returned to his natural appearance. And coming down from the mountain, he charged that they should tell no man what they had seen, save when the Son of Man should have been risen from the dead. Matthew 17:9 says, coming down from the mountain, Jesus commanded them, saying, tell the vision to no man, till the Son of Man be risen from the dead. With the erroneous natures of the kingdom and without the guidance of the Spirit given, they were not prepared to preach Christ to the world. We'll continue in our next class.